you want a vision of the future, Winston, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever.
They will run you dizzy. They will pile falsehood on top of falsehood until you can't tell a lie from the truth and you won't even want to. That's how the powerful keep their power. Don't you read the papers?
The world is a college of corporations, inexorably determined by the immutable bylaws of business. The world is a business, Mr. Beale.
It has been since man crawled out of the slime.
Welcome to another episode of Our Interesting Times. It is my pleasure to have Charlie Robinson back on the show. Of course, he is the author of The Octopus of Global Control and also the co-author of the soon-to-be-released The Controlled Demolition of the American Empire, from the founding of the Federal Reserve to 9/11 to the coronavirus panic. Yes, all those things are related, and we'll talk about that tonight. He co-edited with Jeff Berwick. Charlie, how are you doing?
I am fantastic, and I will make one correction. The book is out now.
Oh, it is now. Okay. About,
yep.
When did it come out?
It's been out. It came out a week ago Friday.
Right? Oh, okay,
like
so yeah.
Friday right before the elections, and on election day, as appropriate as it may be, it became a number one bestseller on Amazon, and I credit that mostly to Jeff, because Jeff has this massive following.
Uh-huh.
Nobody knows who I am, but they all know who Jeff is, and so he got all his people riled up, and they went out and bought the book in droves, and it was kind of appropriate. And like, my biggest complaint about the book was that I really wanted it to come out sooner. I just wanted us to get this thing wrapped up sooner, and we were ready to do it in March, and everything was lining up, and we're okay, let's get this thing going. And then the corona situation hit, and we both went, we should probably hold off and see how this plays out for a couple of months. And that's what we did, of course, and we were able to incorporate that back throughout the book, and then released it at a time, a couple days before the election. And we're talking about, mm-hmm. the controlled demolition of the American Empire, and people are going, yeah, I get it now, you know? And so the one thing that, like, the main frustration for me turned out in the end to be the best thing that we did, which was to delay it. The timing worked out great, and the people were enthusiastic. And I think it was topical, and we were able to weave the coronavirus component into it throughout the whole book. And so it's out. It is available on Amazon in paperback and Kindle format. We've kept the price really low to make it easy for people as an impulse buy. It's $15 for the paperback and $6 for the Kindle. So please at least take a look and see what you think. And maybe after this interview, we chat about it, people will be inclined to say, well, maybe I like this. Or maybe, hey, there's someone in my life that I think would benefit from this. So, let us be the bad guys. Send them the book.
Yeah, it'd be a good book to have coming into the holidays, if they let us have the holidays.
Right.
Right. The coronavirus, we've had this election debacle, and of course, it isn't quite as clean as the media is making out to making it out to be. That's an understatement. I think there's lawsuits in four or five states, recounts going on in six battleground states. There is strong evidence of serious, if not widespread, voter vote counting fraud, software glitches. Some people have said this. There was a software program that was used to switch votes in Michigan. Thousands and thousands of votes in 47 counties. I went to bed thinking Donald Trump had a solid lead, and he did. And I thought he was going. If if you subtract, you know, chicanery and fraud, that he'd win with about 300 electoral votes, a clean victory. In a period, he did get that until 4 a.m. Through the alchemy of black box mail-in voting, Joe Biden started turning these states. That was Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, even Georgia. That's chutzpah. And they're really, I think they've overdone it. And for tens of millions, if not 70 million, if even maybe tens of millions of even Joe Biden supporters know that some trick has been pulled, and that there is, this election is not going to have any legitimacy, despite what the media has declared Joe Biden the winner, despite, you know, no certifications. And I think substantiated charges of rampant fraud. You know, I don't know what type of remedy they can get in the courts. There is some good legal arguments, you know, where the election laws are overturned by governors and also state Supreme Court, state courts. And that there, so there's some grounds for disputing that, but there's also the Electoral College remedy, where the state legislatures, particularly the six states in question, are all controlled by Republican legislatures. And it's kind of funny, when this first happened, I looked up and said, wait, all these states are Republican. And I brought in the case that was, or the point that was made in Bush v. Gore, that states have plenary authority to choose the manner in which electors are chosen. And if they think their slate of electors is in jeopardy or tainted, they can, at a drop of the hat, vote and choose their own slate of electors and correct the situation. They have plenary authority in that. And I hear more and more talk about this. So I thought that was interesting. I said, wow, that's, you know, give people an election in civics and constitutional law. That might have to happen. But relevant to tonight is your book is that the problems we're seeing in the current election stem from the coronavirus, the false pandemic, where because the conditions that were created, particularly mail-in votes, due to coronavirus, I hear that so many times, due to coronavirus, they scared people away from the polls because they might die if they go vote. Now, I don't know why that doesn't count as voter suppression, but that's a whole other story. But apparently this mail-in balloting, 30 times more than the regular election, has created ample opportunity for massive fraud. At least there's a lot of evidence for that needs to be investigated, something the media is not willing to do. They see no evidence for it because they're not looking for it.
They're paid to look the other way.
Yeah.
They don't care. I mean,
you know, so here we are. I mean, so we have the coronavirus is casting a long shadow. I think as planned, we can go back to it or you can work up to it. But today's political crisis, the lockdowns, the effects on the electoral process, the economy, it deflated the Trump presidency in many ways. He's responsible for a lot of it. He signed the executive orders. He got played, or he's a part of it. I don't know about that. But he played a big part in letting the governors, and we've had a situation where governors and mayors have just gone wild. You can make a video like governors gone wild for the past few months, what they've got away with, the tyrannical decrees, which, by the way, are being turned back in the courts when challenged. That's one thing Americans should remember, that there is remedy for this stuff if you're willing to fight this. But okay, so I'll let you take it from there. Your book, Controlled Demolition of the American Empire, and it seems like it really accelerated this year.
Well, it certainly did. And what's funny is that Jeff and I started talking about it in the summer of 2018. I was on his show to promote my Octopus of Global Control book. And when we got done with our interview, we were still chatting on Zoom, and he said something along the lines of, you know, it's all coming down, right? And I was like, what specifically are you talking about? He's like, the whole thing, the financial system, the American government, the way it's all set up, and it's just a house of cards. And I was like, well, of course. I mean, it's completely unstable. The things that we've done, we're an empire. And he said, well, we should do something together. We should write, you know, maybe we should write a book together. And I said, that sounds like a good idea. For people that don't know who Jeff Berwick is, he's a Canadian who started a financial services company in Canada back in the late 90s, took it public, watched it get totally demolished by the dot-com boom. He wound up buying a sailboat to sail around the world after that. He had kind of, you know, needed to clear his head, wound up crashing his sailboat in Mexico, decided he liked Mexico a lot, wound up staying there, married a Mexican woman, and has been in Acapulco, Mexico for the last 10 plus years. So he is, then he started the Dollar Vigilante, which is a financial news, financial services company. And he also started a conference called Anarcapulco, which is the largest anarchist convention in the world. It's held in Acapulco, Mexico. It has anarchy type of content, cryptocurrency, health and wellness, unschooling. It's a really interesting event. Ron Paul has been a speaker there the last couple of years. I've been a speaker there the last couple of years, and David Icke. And it's really kind of turned into the Super Bowl for the alternative media. It's a really fantastic place. So when you write a book with a guy who, who's an anarchist and runs a multi-million dollar company, and you know, when people tell him, "Oh, you like anarchy so much, then go to Somalia." Well, he does. He got on a plane and went to Somalia to check it out, to see what was going on there. And they, well, you talk about hyperinflation, but you've never lived through it. So he went to Venezuela to go see what it was like during hyperinflation. And when the Epstein situation came about, if you remember the video that kind of this, you know, eight months ago or so, of those two maniacs that raided Epstein's island with their cameras, Jeff was one of them. Luke Radowski was the other one. So, I mean, this is the type of personality type I'm working with here on this book. I mean, this is a guy, they broke the mold when they made Jeff Berwick. So I'm an American from America, lived here my whole life. Jeff is a guy that sees the world from a totally different angle. And I really, really like that. So we put our heads together and started the idea. He said, well, you know, how should we frame it? And I said, I've got an idea for it. And when he made that comment, it's all coming down, it made me think of the way you would take down a building, you know, like a 47 story steel frame high rise in lower Manhattan on the afternoon of September 11th, 2001, something like that, coming down symmetrically, planned out. So I thought to myself, all right, let's frame this in the way that you would, let's discover the scientific aspects of how you take down an actual building. What are the things that they do, these demolition experts, what do they do when they're looking at a building? Well, they pre-weaken the building, and they identify support columns and things like that. So I in my head, I thought, okay, well, let's make the framework of this book comparable to a high rise, taking down a high rise building. So the main eight chapters of it are a rotting foundation, where we get into systemic issues that really set America on this path towards destruction. Then there's pre-weakening of the building. This is talking about policies that hurt. When you're pre-weakening, when you're going to take down an actual building, you don't go and blow out all of the major support columns, but you do pre-weaken it. You take out all of the minor support components wherever they are. They might be, you know, in roof trusses and things like that. You go through and you take these things, you cut them in advance, not enough that the building will fall down or that it's compromised structurally that badly, but just enough. So you'll pre-weaken the building. Then our next chapter is identifying the support columns. Then we go to rigging the detonators, who wired the building, ringing the alarm bells, pushing down the plunger, and finally clearing the debris. So within each of these eight major categories, which kind of mirror my eight tentacles in the octopus book, within each of these eight categories, we then go into detail as to what, you know, a variety of different topics in there, and try and paint this picture of what you would do if you were trying to destroy the American empire. And to be clear, we're not talking about the destruction necessarily of America, but the American empire, but much in the way that the USSR was destroyed in 1991. Russia still stays. It still remains, but it lost its grip on all the satellite nations like Belarus and Czechoslovakia and Yugoslavia and all these. So those kind of faded away. Its influence in that region faded away. We see similarities. We see the American empire going through similar phases where it loses its 1,000 military bases. It loses its role as the world's reserve currency. It loses the petrodollar standard, you know, all these agreements. I mean, America's behavior around the globe has been pretty reprehensible for the last 50 plus years. I take no pleasure in saying that as an American myself. I wish I could paint a different picture. I just can't. And I think that there are a lot of countries out there that wouldn't mind seeing us get knocked down a couple of pegs based on the way we've treated other countries. We've strong-armed them into doing things they didn't want to do. We've invaded them. We've trumped up false charges on them for and slapped sanctions. We've bombed people. We've regime changed. I mean, we've done some pretty despicable things to these countries. And so The idea that this American empire will last forever is a common theme shared by most people that live in empires. They never think it'll happen to them until it does. And then everyone on the outside is going, you didn't see the signs? They were everywhere. So we start the book by going back a little bit into the history of empires and how they move through this cycle. And we talk about the stages in this cycle. And when you look at it, it is undeniable that we are at the final stage of the cycle. I mean, every sort of aspect you want to compare our American empire to the Roman empires and to the Greeks, and we're there, we're at the end. And so what does that mean? What does that mean for the world? What is it going to look like after that? So we try and paint that picture as best as we can. And I'm not giving anything away when I say that we wrap up the book in a very positive manner, because though this will be painful for a lot of people, there will be opportunities in the aftermath. There will be people that will not only survive, but will also prosper. And Jeff Berwick's theme with his dollar vigilante is surviving and prospering after the death of the dollar. So he's been writing about this for a long, long time. And he thought that when we were writing this, he thought we might be a little early on the release of it, and maybe we would have been if we'd put it out in March, but he thought that we were a little early. And as we got into when we were doing the Corona part, I remember asking him, do you think we're still early? And he says, oh no, I think we're right on time. So that's where we are. It's just trying to make this comparison the way you would see a building fall is the same way you would see the empire fall.
Yeah. Symptoms of a dying empire, the United States, Can you give us an example of
sure. Let's talk about, so in the Roman Empire, they did a thing called coin clipping. And what that is they would take the gold and silver coins that they had, and they would cut on the edges of them little pie-shaped slices out all around the coin, and they'd collect all those up. And after you did that to enough coins, you'd have a big enough pile. They'd melt that down and make a new coin out of it. So they were doing the Federal Reserve trick before the Federal Reserve was around. They were trying to create money out of nothing. They were debasing their own currency. That's just a minor thing. That's where we are for sure with our American policy and the U.S. dollar and things like that, and the bread and circuses component of Rome. We're certainly in that area now. We are just completely distracted by all kinds of useless things like the Kardashians and at the expense of paying attention to the important things. So we're being intentionally distracted so that we're not keeping our focus on what's really going on, because if we were, we would all clearly see this for what it is, which is, the government is, another one of those symptoms that are matching up is that the governments in these dying empires, they know it. They're the first to know it, that it's coming apart. And so they start looting on a scale that is epic. And I mean, we just look at the behavior in America from big corporations and all the banks and they're trying their best to grab anything that's not nailed down, steal as much money as they can. The politicians are, and it's just a symptom of what you do when the whole thing is coming down. That house is on fire, you're in there grabbing and anything you can carry and trying to run out of there as fast as you can. So that's unfortunately where we are. And that's, of course, it's unsustainable. You can't run a country like that. You can't run a country when nobody believes in the value of your currency and when people are, so dumbed down. I mean, it might work for a little bit to keep them distracted, but you get to a point where you've got idiocracy, where everybody's dumb. Nobody can figure anything out. So it's unfortunate that we've gotten to this point, but a symptom that is consistent throughout all the empires is this lack of objectivity of the populace, that they just cannot see it for what it really is. They're in denial. They just refuse to acknowledge the very obvious signs that are looking them in the face. And yet others that are on the outskirts of it, or people that write about it in the aftermath, go, what were you guys looking at? Or what were you not looking at? I mean, this corruption was everywhere. Crime was everywhere. Your currency was garbage. You were starting indiscriminate wars all around the globe that you couldn't pay for. You were increasingly adding more and more laws to your society and trying to close your grip on people because you could feel it slipping through. Like, what did you think was going to happen? And of course, so it's very obvious looking back on it. It's like, it's like anything. In hindsight, you can see crystal clear. But while you're in it, and we're in it right now, it for some people, it's very tough to be objective about the negative components of the society that they're living in, because a lot of people just feel like, don't ruin my dream, okay? This is my reality. I'm going to ride this as long as I can. Depending on your age, you may say, I only have a couple of years left on this planet. I don't need to get bogged down in this stuff. I can understand that. I can understand the ignorance to it, like the intentional ignorance. I don't respect it, of course, but I can understand why someone wouldn't want to be honest about this stuff. But they're not doing themselves any favors by pretending that this isn't here and pretending that we're not headed this direction. We've got, you know, when you start to silence the whistleblowers and throw them in prison on trumped up charges, this is the sign of a dying empire. And unfortunately, we're seeing that here in the United States with Assange and Manning and the banning of Snowden and people like this, people that have come forward and you can look back to how it used to be with Daniel Ellsberg and these people that would come forward, and it would be a very uncomfortable truth, but because it was the truth, it prevailed, and it, you know, and the media picked up on it, and then it became known as fact. Nowadays, the media are actively working against us. So even when you discover, you know, when you're a whistleblower like Assange and you come out and you discover this information about the United States government and their behavior and what they're doing, and you expose it, you would hope that the other members of the media would have your back and would say, this is important to us. I might not even agree with it, but you know, the freedom to expose these crimes should be paramount. It should be the primary thing that we focus on. And nobody got their back, and the government threw these people in jail or put them in show trials or things like this. And it's, so we've slipped a lot in the last 50 years or so on that component. And that is unfortunately a bad sign. It means that we have overt censorship, as we've seen on social media and places like that. And then we have more of a hard to quantify type of censorship, and that's self-censorship, where I don't post something on Twitter because I know that I already got thrown off of Twitter in February for jokingly suggesting, when are we going to throw Bill Gates into a volcano? And Twitter banned me forever for that. So now I have to think before I put something on Twitter, even as a joke, because I know what has happened before. So how do you measure that? You know, you can't, but it impacts everybody. So we're self-censoring ourself, which is devious. And if for what we don't self-censor, if we put it out there, then we get to deal with the social media and the fact checkers that are all criminals, and the mainstream media, which is, you know, an unabashed joke at these days. So, you know, the truth has a hard time getting out. And that is, that's what you do when you feel like you're losing a grip on your country or your empire. You tighten the screws down on anybody speaking out against it. But that always has a way of backfiring.
Yeah, you suppress it, and then people find other avenues, or they express it in different ways, particularly maybe violent ways, mm-hmm. Which the state will exploit too.
They love that. They love it if you get violent, because they have an answer to that. They have a monopoly on violence.
Mm-hmm. And so, then you have, you know, in the wake of this, the so-called Biden victory, you have, like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez calling for enemies list to be developed. Now, she is a member of Congress, and I'm sure I don't think she understands her oath of office, but she's calling for an enemies list. And you would think if Congress really, the members of Congress actually, you know, respected their own oaths of office, that she'd be, censored or sanctioned for taking that position. You also have Robert Reich, a former Secretary of Labor, you know, calling for a truth and reconciliation after Trump is gone, as if, you know, apparently Trump's 4 years of president is the equivalent of apartheid in South Africa. don't think it's turned out too well in South Africa lately, so I don't know if that's, they should be an example. You know, one man, one vote hasn't turned out too well in South Africa. But also you had, I think it was a Joe Lockhart, who's also making the same thing. Apparently, if you've advocated or worked for the Trump administration, that you won't find any gainful employment. And so not that coupled with the sort of the social credit score thing and the social where they're using social media and sort of big data to target people, you know, it's just accepted now, if you take, you have a controversial view on some matter of politics or history, that you should be fired. You should get your bank account shut down. You should get cut off from credit card services. This started with the alt-right. Now it's moving into the more mainstream. And again, it's when they let it get, when America let these companies get away with that, you know, with that, it was inevitable they'd start moving closer to the center, because it's suppressing free speech. And of course, these corporations, whether it's Twitter or Facebook, they're looking to control everything, and they're shutting down any meaningful debate on social media, despite the fact that, you know, they've been given this 230 exemption of a liability from any, you know, anything that's posted online. Unfortunately, Trump could have withdrawn that at any time and open up these corporations to all types of lawsuits, or at least threaten to do that if they didn't stop you know, attacking everyone's free speech. But they claim to be private corporations, so what are you going to do about it, right? It's not an assault on First Amendment, because they're not the government. Well, it's not quite that simple, because they're given privileges from the government, particularly that exemption 230. Not to mention the fact the whole internet platform was created when the taxpayers' dime. You know, they've and government contracts. Inkytel funded Google, and it also funded Facebook. CIA funded that. So there really is a huge overlap, because there really is no difference between, you know, these corporations and the corporate state, where they're working in tandem to create this sort of neo-feudal corporatist globalist monster that they want to, that they've been using the coronavirus pandemic as an excuse to redesign everything, and they call it the Great Reset.
Yeah.
You know, and part of how they're going to manage the collapse of the dollar is this great economic reset, where they do away with the dollar, maybe some, you know, basket of currencies, SDRs, but eventually they want to move to a situation where no one has money. They just have sort of a line of credit, of digital credit, with the company store, and the company store is the world. It's all controlled by one global octopus, as your book, you know, your previous book addresses that.
Yeah, that's their dream. And so is it any wonder that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is dreaming up lists of people, you know, to put on, or Robert Reich and these guys? I mean, what they've been talking about are talking points. They're getting talking points, because Robert Reich wasn't the only person talking about that truth and reconciliation component. There are a variety of people all on the left that were going on and on and on about that.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer Rubin.
Jennifer Rubin, for sure. She's a I mean, why are people listening to either of these two people at this point? They've done enough. They're such hypocrites. But, you know, but that's the mainstream media for you. And I feel like I have a conversation with somebody that is locked in and, you know, getting all their information from the mainstream media. It's a case study when you just have that, just to try to have a normal conversation with them. You can see the programming at work. It's so crystal clear. I'm not trying to say I'm better than anybody else, but I didn't realize I was being programmed by the mainstream media for a long, long time. But once you see it, it's like seeing a magician's trick. You go, oh my God, I recognize that tactic. I know, you know, he's going to pull the rabbit out of this. Yeah, you're watching the right hand, but what you need to watch is the left hand. And it's like that with the media now, where I can watch them and I can see where they're, I mean, I can see where they're going before they go there. I can see that the setup, I can see the lies. I can see that they're, you know, the plan to try and start the process of discrediting somebody or pretend or saying, you know, we've called the election for Joe Biden. Good for you. Why don't you do it the right way? Why don't you let the process take its place and not declare the election for Joe Biden, especially since before the election, you guys were all very clear, Donald Trump is going to claim victory prematurely. Don't let him do it. And then you go out and do the exact same thing that you said was going to happen, only you do it for Joe Biden. And you don't even care that you're so transparent with what you're doing, because so many people on the left don't even care. They're like, oh, the mainstream media is for, is against Trump and for Biden. Great. So am I. So I don't care. I don't care if it's rigged media.
Yeah. It's Orange Man on my bad. Team. Yeah. Orange Man bad.
Orange Man bad.
Yeah.
And look, I don't like Trump personally as a human. I'm not even talking about his politics. It's just a personality type that I don't love. You know, the guys that are like, I'm great. This is the best. But, you know, I find myself defending him quite often against the media and against the left, who is so unhinged. And so, I mean, Trump derangement syndrome, whoever came up with that, man, they were on it, because that is something that a lot of these people have, that they just go bananas when you bring up that guy's name. And like I said, I'm not a huge fan of his, but I also am not in favor of just making up crazy things and saying, you know, accusing him of it, or pretending like he's, you know, a crazy person because he starts talking about not wanting to get into certain wars. Yeah, and the media is like,
yeah. Oh. I mean, was there, I mean, I guess there's more substantial evidence of voter fraud in this election, massive voter fraud, vote counting fraud in this election than there was for Russian collusion, involvement in the election. Oh, but the media, but he was impeached for this. You know, but and nowhere was there ever the clamor for evidence. I mean, in the media, it was just reports and what people said, and then there was the political lynching that he suffered in the House of Representatives. You know,
embarrassment. And I was constantly defending him against that. And everyone goes, "Oh, well, sure, you want your guy?" I'm like, "He's not my guy. He's not my guy."
No, no. Okay. I didn't vote for him in 2016.
But the
moment he was, I mean, the day he was inaugurated, they rioted.
Oh yeah,
it's been nonstop. Yeah. You know, this stuff. And so, you know, one charge after another, these things. And now, you know, of course, this summer, they unleashed these riots, you know, phony outrage with George Floyd dying and these things. Then they all of a sudden now we suffered several weeks of sort of an anti-white rectification shaming operation, almost Maoist in nature, and it was just insane. Black Lives Matter taking the knee, these things, and then the burning of the Antifa riots, and then in late summer, we're told the FBI says, and the Department of Homeland Security says, that after a summer of radical leftists and Black Lives Matter people rioting, burning cities, looting, we're told that white supremacism is a concern.
Right.
Despite they can't point to no organization nor clear definition of what that even is. No.
Yeah. I could just keep running into those KKK guys at the grocery store all the time, right?
Yeah. You know.
I mean, there are white people that are racist. All right. There are every color people that are racist. Okay. Yes. This is, nobody has a monopoly on this. But what I saw this summer was that the radical left are the most racist people around, while claiming and accusing everybody else of being racist and Nazis. They're doing the things that they themselves, you know, are projecting onto others. It's this classic case that the right has their problems too, but the left has this tactic that they use that is so transparent of just projecting all of the horrible things that they themselves are doing onto their enemy and saying, see, look at that person. They're crazy. They're doing all these things. And you're like, would you like a mirror? Cause you're doing all those things as well. It's you, you're, you know, so it's, I watch this and the bending over backwards of these mayors in like Portland and Seattle to go, hey, so mayor, what's your name? What's going on with all the burning and the looting and everything? They're like, what looting? What burning?
Yes.
And you're like, the stuff that's happening right down the street that we just came from, that we all saw and is on TV. They're like, that's peaceful protests. And it's like, okay, clearly you guys think that we're all stupid. So we're operating from a place of distrust just from the beginning.
Well, it's an insult, and it's insulting. This election is insulting.
It's insulting.
The corruption is so blatant. It's insulting to say that one candidate can get 100,000 votes.
at 4:30 in the morning.
4:30 in the morning, unanimously, or you know, all of a sudden 100,000 Joe Biden votes come in and it flips the state. That's an insult, and everyone knows it. You know, and just like when they asked left members during the summer, someone approached Gerald Nadler asked him about all the violent riots. He just said that nothing's happening.
Antifa was an idea.
Just an idea. Yeah, just an idea that's, you know,
well,
breaking
your idea is burning down Seattle. Yes. So,
well, that's another thing is we get in this is where this whole thing gets in this whole demolition, controlled demolition idea, is that what we've experienced with the coronavirus, the lockdown, the state of emergency, the economic effects, and then the riots, then this election, it looks like a textbook color revolution operation going on.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, exactly. I've been saying all summer, it's the Black Revolution. Yeah. It's the Black Lives Matter Revolution. George Soros does the Rose Revolution and the Orange Revolution and the Peach Revolution, and all throughout the world, they always have to have a color, right? Mm-hmm. This is the Black Revolution.
And
I don't mean that,
you know,
in terms of Black people necessarily, but the Black Lives Matter component of it.
You have all these, like Kim Gardner in St. Louis, or that guy. Kravner, I think is his name, in Philadelphia, and also the idiot up in Minnesota, Ellison, I think his name, who's like touting Black or Antifa, his son's a member. So all these prosecutors are, Soros has this down ballot voting campaign, and so does Bloomberg, Mayor Bloomberg, was doing this too. And they have this, they support these candidates throughout the country. You have these billionaires who are, you know, you talk about Russia affecting the election.
Right.
What country does Soros, what citizenship does Soros have, by the way?
Does anyone know?
Is he just a transnational cosmopolitan?
He's Hungarian.
He's Hungarian by birth.
He lives in America. I don't know, actually.
But his Open Society Foundation is funding these terrorist groups that the FBI, Robert Ray, denies exists. But the reality is that, you know, these organizations that are creating mayhem are connected to the FBI and to the corporations and the NGOs, and they're working to subvert the subvert the country. And the country really, if the government was truly sovereign, they would invoke, you know, RICO laws, and you could have state governments that have grand jury investigations, because this is criminal. When you have prosecutors that are, you know, that are supposed to maintain law and order or sworn to promoting disorder. I think that's what you get with some of these governors like Newsom in California or Cuomo in New York or Pritzker in Illinois and de Blasio in New York, who just sat back and let his city collapse.
I am speculating here, but I'm sure that I'm right. These people have been promised something.
Mm-hmm.
It is the only explanation for their behavior. They have either been threatened and blackmailed, which is totally possible because almost all of these people are reprehensible scumbags. So there's no doubt you can find some dirt on Gavin Newsom or de Blasio, believe me. Either they've been bribed or they've been blackmailed that way, or they've been promised something. Secretary level position in the Biden administration. I don't know. But somebody has said, if you do this, we will give you something else. Now, it might be money, it might be power, it might be little boys. Who knows with these people? It could be all three of those things. But they're acting in a way that is incongruent with rational, normal behavior of politicians. Politicians are in charge of trying to make as many people like them as possible. So when you have a problem like a gigantic riot that's happening, what you do is you get rid of that riot as quickly as you can, as peacefully as you can, but you get rid of it, because if it continues to go on, the citizens will look at you and think that you're incompetent and not vote you back. They don't seem to have that fear of any sort of repercussions from their actions.
Yeah, there's like a Mel Daley in his day in the 60s, whoever corrupt his machine was, Chicago Democratic politics. He probably had some affinity or love for Chicago, and also concern for the voters, or at least getting their votes. So it inhibited the level of corruption. It also made him somewhat work, you know, somewhere in the interest of the city. We don't see that with that idiot mayor in Chicago, Lightfoot. We're all dysfunctional. Many of them lesbians, but I think it was a strange, you know, it was like,
yeah, it is kind of a weird thing.
Just dysfunctional. But they don't seem to care. And you saw that in that leaked phone conversation, Lightfoot with the city alderman. And she just didn't seem to care about what was happening to this one alderman's precinct or district. And usually your city's burning, you're letting all the, you know, the stores getting raided. what's going on there. And it's almost as if, and this is what's kind of chilling, is they don't seem to be too concerned about the next election.
No.
Because as we can see, whether elections will be canceled or they can become moot, because with the level of fraud that the media is willing to tolerate, voting is not going to matter anyway.
No. No, no.
The Governor Whitmer was elected overwhelmingly because of her leadership.
And let's remember that Lori Lightfoot is also on camera saying that we need to pledge our allegiance to the New World Order, which is insane. Like I couldn't. I've heard Prince Charles and I've heard the Pope and I've heard these people say that before. I didn't think it got that low down the line, you know. Mayor of Chicago, I suppose, is the third.
Well, you had the strong city initiatives and Agenda 21.
Yeah, yeah.
And ICLEI, the International Council of Local Initiatives. So the infrastructure is there to sort of subvert local governments, make it seem like this stuff is happening at the local level. It is, but it's being implemented centrally. That's what Agenda 21 set up.
Yes. Yes.
And also, and you get a hint of coordination through like something like Event 201, with a sort of war game or tabletop the exercise, and they talk about how they'll talk about the infodemic, and they control information, control the dissemination of news, and suppress criticism of, you know. Though at the same time, they're coordinating with state and local officials, public health officials, institutions like, you know, Johns Hopkins. These are all the institutions that rely on for what we, you know, for public health guidance rules, the CDC. But then you realize all these organizations that relying on for information and in a way leadership are all horribly corrupt. They're all bought out by billionaires like Bill Gates.
Right.
And you can draw the schematic, you know.
Yeah. And when you do, it makes perfect sense to, as James Corbett calls them, normies, right? People that aren't into this sorts of topics. But if you just try to point out Bill Gates is a bad guy, the average person looks at you like you're crazy, you know? And you're like, no, there's a little bit more to the story. And let me explain. And this is how it's done. And this is what's going on. And Event 201. And they go, what? you know? And of course, the next step, whether you're, you know, telling someone about Event 201 or the dangers of vaccines or whatever, the next thing out of their mouth is, well, if that was true, I would have heard about it on my nightly news. And that's where you come back to thinking, you know, it's that mainstream media news that keeps all of the lies together. They keep all the agendas going. They keep the narratives going. They're so important to this whole thing functioning. And what we've seen in 2020 is just blatant pathological lying from the mainstream media in a manner that, I mean, I have been critical of them for a long time, and I have said accurately some horrible things about the way the mainstream media is, but I have never seen anything like 2020 in the media. They just don't care. You know, talk about being promised something. I mean, they've got that same mentality as these mayors you were just talking about, where they almost don't care if it destroys their ratings, destroys their credibility, whatever. They're pot committed at this point. They are in it, and they are going to, like, hey, you know, aren't you Jeff Zucker at CNN? Aren't you worried that everybody's going to see how utterly transparent it is that you want Joe Biden to win when you're supposed to be the most objective name in news or whatever? You know, and his response would be something along the lines of, I don't care. I don't care what anybody thinks. I don't care. We want this guy to be the president. We're going to do everything we can to make this guy the president. And I don't care if anyone thinks we're not objective. So there's a chance that maybe through all of this, that enough people change their perspective and they go, the mainstream media is not our friend. You know, if we get enough people that realize that, that's one component of this that where I feel a little bit hopeful that you can kind of, you know, try and tear down the narratives they're starting to build. They're trying to build, because if you get enough people that look at them and just with utter disgust and realize that they have no credibility and they should not be listened to and they should be, you know, laughed at. Once you get a critical mass of people like that, then it makes it increasingly more difficult for the government to lie to us in a way that's very effective. Now, no doubt by that time they'll just be beaming thoughts right into our brains. So it probably won't even matter, but still I feel like the media exposed themselves to the average person this year for being just hypocritical and totally distrustful. So that's one good thing that's come out of this.
Yeah, and this whole dialectic that they've created, Trump bad, other side good, mm-hmm. Is they build Trump up. He gets elected president. And then, you got this 4-year hate campaign against him. He's accused of being a polarizing figure when pretty much all the polarization has been on his opponents, his leftists. Him being portrayed as sort of a racist right winger, which is ridiculous. Trump was always a centrist, pragmatic Democrat because he was a businessman in New York. Yeah. So his politics has shifted. I think he ran in the Independent Party, and then he was a Democrat, Independent. He was friends with the Clintons and these things. You have pictures of him, or at least he associated with them. I don't know at that right. level, or is anyone really friends? I don't know.
I don't know.
it's like maybe normal relationships don't exist. I think Whitney Webb wrote about this at the Last American Vagabond about the Transition Integrity Project.
Yes.
And they game this, and now this election. Because of COVID, was tailor-made for this type of stuff, where you can promote the conditions for a sort of a civil war. You have two polarized sides not listening to each other, an election which is clearly fraudulent. So you have 70 million Americans feeling completely disenfranchised. And it can be very easily turned into something else. One thing is sort of the demolition of the United States, the American Empire, and I can see how at a meta level. This is being manipulated. Whatever the meta level politics are to this stuff is, Trump, deserves to exhaust all his legal and political options because I think he rightfully won the election. But I do think, you'll see this situation. This was foreseen. It's like even Trump warned about the mail-in ballots being a disaster. He's been vindicated. Of course, no one is saying, oh, well, Trump was right.
No, they can't say that.
Because they're denying there's any problem, even though there's an obvious problem. It's like, it's almost as if you're in New York City and everyone's running down the street. And what's the problem? We don't know. And they're not talking about the 25-foot gorilla chasing them. King Kong isn't there. It's like it's there. Everyone. And so they have a credibility issue, which I think they've almost like, why would they shoot whatever remaining credibility they have, blow it on this? And so, I think it speak to something the Biden campaign adopting a lot of the Great Reset slogans like Build Back Better. He's all about wearing masks, trying to create a federal or national policy for mask wearing, not wanting to know when you wear it or how you wear it or what type of mask. And it's so messy and so anti-science and imprecise. That's another thing is we talk about science, but the moment you put a Fauci, you corner him asking questions, he becomes this sleazy politician that he really is. He's not really a scientist. And he becomes really imprecise. It's like, so what's the point of science? Science is supposed to be about precision. It's not about consensus in politics. It's not about symbolism or wearing talismans like masks. But you realize just how absurd it all is. It's all a show. It's a pageant that they've put on.
It has been the craziest television show in the world. We've watched them, just throw out these people to us in the media as, put them on pedestals, godlike, Fauci, Birx, Bill Gates. And these are your saviors. These are the people that will
don't look in their history.
Don't look in their history. Like, I have questions about, hey, here's Fauci. He was instrumental in the AIDS epidemic. And you go, oh, okay. Well, let's ask the gay community what they think about. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't do that because they hate him. They hate his guts for what he did with AZT. And it's like, well, what about Bill Gates? Bill Gates is, he's a philanthropist and he's the devil. I'm not a religious guy, so I don't mean literally, but I mean, he is not what he appears to be. He is not what he portrays himself to be. This I'm wearing sweaters and I got this geeky voice and all this is Mr. Rogers component is all for effect.
Yeah, with this guy's Kermit cold, the voice, Kermit the Frog voice, and Mr. Rogers.
Kermit
sweaters.
The Frog voice. He's got Mr. Rogers outfits, and he's just here to help everybody. And that works at the surface level until you do 5 minutes of digging on the internet, and then you can find all kinds of things, you know, so what are we doing? We're allowing these people to be presented to us as saviors, and we're not even allowed to like conduct an interview, or check their references, ask for their resume. You know, they're just given to us. So of course we're screwed up. Of course we're going in different directions. Fauci says, don't wear the mask for the first 3 months. Then he says, oh my God, you've got to wear the mask. Then he throws out the pitch at the Washington Nationals game, if you can even call that throwing out a pitch. And then he sits in the stands next to two other people, and he's got his mask down after just saying that you've got to have your mask up. And how dare you not have your mask up? These are tactics of psychological warfare. Mm-hmm. And this is an operation against the American people, well, against the people of the world in general, but we're specifically talking about America. We are being put through a psychological operation. There are so many conflicting pieces of information. The mainstream media tells you one thing, the scientists tell you one thing, a different batch of scientists tell you something totally different, and they're able to back it up. And the next thing you know, they're silenced. The mainstream media silences them. Social media silences them. And if you associate with them and have them on your podcast, you know, or then you get deplatformed too. This is not a normal reaction to us having a debate about information. This is not a debate. This is them telling us what the science is and us not even allowed to challenge the most basic premise of it. Like, hey, man, why are you wearing a bandana around your face? Do you actually think that's going to do anything? You know, and you bring that conversation up, and the morons, the NPCs that are living in this country, they just reflexively turn on you as if you're trying. And then with the, you're trying to kill grandma stuff, and you're just like, oh my God, I don't even know where, I can't even have a conversation with these people. They're like zombies, just, you know, seeing their masks and all of this as a badge of honor that they're doing the right thing. And you just want to go like, wake up, like turn off your news, like think about this. Let's have a real conversation about what we're being told and what we're actually seeing with our own eyes. And let's talk about, you know, things like they role played this 6 months in advance, and then it wound up happening the same way. And the people that were involved in the role playing of this also role played the anthrax, role playing, you know, a Dark Winter simulation in 2001, and then it happened just like that. You know, like, there's a whole lot of backstory to unpack here for people about 2020. So, like, on the surface, it's crazy. Craziest year we've lived through, a variety of things going on. But even that is just surface level crazy, because when you start to dig into the Bill Gates signing $100 billion contact tracing agreement with a representative from the Senate or from Congress, the summer of 2019, that's a problem. And then the Event 201 role playing it in October of 2019, and you know, we've got to have these conversations if we're going to get to the bottom of what's actually happening. We need to get real honest about the sort of manipulation of reality that is happening, and the media is running cover for these people, and they're doing a very good job of it, because most people haven't connected any of these. They don't even know there's dots, let alone have they connected them. And they're trying to make sense out of 2020, and it maybe isn't adding up in a way that it should be. And I want to shake them and go, that's, yes, the reason why you're feeling like it's not all adding up is because there are some very important things happening behind the scenes from some very dangerous people that are making these things happen. And you need to understand that component, the Soroses, the Bill Gates, the Faucis, all these people, that, you know, transition integrity team and the role playing exercises that's going on in the US military, simulating things for our election. Like, if you need to know these things, because once you know it, it starts to make 2020 make a whole lot more sense. Like, we are seriously in the middle of a major psychological operation that is targeting us and gaslighting us on a level that is that we could have never imagined. And as frustrating as this is, and as horrible as these people are that are doing this to us, I still find myself feeling like I want to lecture everybody as well and say, like, we need to step up. We need to take a responsibility in this as well. We need to make sure that everybody's educated about this, because right now we've got a nation full of dummies that aren't paying attention. And we're, on some levels, we're kind of getting what we deserve, because they're going to take advantage of us and push us as far as they can push us. And if everybody's so dumbed down that they're not going to push back, well, then I guess it's over, you know? So I get frustrated with the masses of Americans that are willfully ignorant to what's going on. They're not necessarily stupid. They're just ignorant to this fact, or they're just watching Rachel Maddow too much and swallowing Russiagate for 4 years. It's like, you guys need to, you know, like an airplane where they're all slapping that lady, get a hold of yourself, you know, just slapping her. I feel like we just need an assembly line of that, of just people just slapping the crap out of some people and just waking them up and saying, listen, you play a role in this. You have to participate in this too. You're on this planet with us. All right. We're going to need you to be awake and aware of what's happening, because you have a role. And right now your role is to educate yourself as to what is going on. And don't just listen to the media, and don't trust your politicians. Find different sources of information. Don't even don't take my word for it. If you hear something that I said that sounds crazy, go look it up and see if I'm right. But we've got to take some responsibility for this too, because these maniacs will push us over the edge unless we stand up to them.
Well, when you have experts giving you just honest face, stupid advice in terms of, like, you know, your own health or public health, like wearing a mask without any, what type of mask, inhibit my breathing, and do germs get on the mask, and what if I use a mask, even if everyone had an idea of what mask to use, the idea that millions or tens of millions or billions would use it properly, not touch it, is ridiculous. And also remember, they also told us to stay inside, stay out of the sun, not go to the beach, right, not interact with each other, which is how, you know, traditionally, well, for millions, you know, hundreds of thousands of years, that's how the human race has grown, and by experiencing the environment, not hiding away from germs. This sort of weaponized germ theory where it's all about the germs, which is ridiculous. It's on its face ridiculous. It now it's about declaring war on the virus. I was it's kind of funny, we're talking about science. I was listening to Nancy Pelosi talk. I suffered through an interview with her.
Sorry to hear that.
And she was talking about, we have to follow the science so we can smash the virus.
I'm surprised she doesn't want to bomb it.
Smash the virus.
She's out of her mind.
So she's talking, invoking science, then we're smash the, win the war. You know, it's like, no, you don't. No, it's not how it's done. It's not, there's terrain, the terrain theory. It's how, you know, public health. You know, they were to save more lives instead of locking down the economy, they had shut down every fast food restaurant in America, and would have been far less economic damage.
Of course.
Right? I mean, think about saving lives. They talk about 240,000 lives, when they've admitted that only about 9,000 can be traced to the coronavirus, whatever that is, by the way.
Yeah, whatever that is.
Whatever that is, because it's very vague. Once you get into science, you get, wait a second, genetic sequences, not quite sure. PCR tests aren't really accurate, especially when you run 45 cycles. It says not to. Its creator says don't use it for diagnostic purposes. Yet you're using for diagnostic purposes. Yep. There's no real test. What I'm saying is they still, they cite the 240,000 name, you know, because any given year, 3.2 million Americans die. Give or take a few. It's this, right. 3 million Americans die a year. So now they take 240,000 and say, look, they died because of coronavirus. So it turns out, you know, vast majority of them, there's comorbidity with serious disease, advanced age, and so they've lied to us about that, but they still cite that number. Yep. Even though they've admitted, like Dr. Brooks admitted, that they were faking death certificates to get that number up, you know.
That's it right there. That's part of the operation. That's that's straight up from the CIA handbook on destabilizing a population. You tell them conflicting information at the same time and tell them that both are right. Mm-hmm. So it's insane. It's what they're doing is trying to make us just throw our hands up in the air and say, I give up. I can't, I don't want to participate in this. I don't know what you guys are talking about. This, everything seems so fake. I just whatever. Can we just get back to the new normal? Can we get back to the new normal, please? Well, what's that? Well, that's going to include vaccines for this disease, this killer virus, this virus that is so deadly. It is so deadly that you have to get tested for it just to know that you actually even have it.
I didn't know I was sick.
So, you didn't know? You're a super spreader. I mean, the hypocrisy there is so fantastic. It is staggering.
Well, then they have a parade when Joe Biden's declared the winner.
Right.
Where no one's following, practicing social distancing. They're hugging each other. They're drinking. They're sharing bottles of champagne. Even to Senator Schumer. They have him on film. And then they have him like the mask. Then you see the camera go on him. He tries to put a mask on real fast.
Think about that. That's the perfect encapsulation of the horribleness of government media in 2020, that the media announces who the president is when they're not allowed. I mean, that's not their job. Like, they don't get to pick the president. They did that. They earlier prefaced everything by saying Donald Trump is going to claim victory prematurely. Don't you let him do that. So they went ahead and did the same thing that they were, railing against. And then they finished it off with a big party where nobody had masks on, but they were all hugging each other and drinking out of bottles. And they just pretended that that was totally fine too. After they've spent the last 7 months telling everybody that they're going to die, they're going to kill grandmother, they're not allowed to have Thanksgiving dinner, and that they're super spreaders for going to these things. And that in Sturgis, that was a super spreader event and all these people are dead. And look at what they've, the media is just so dishonest on every level that, I mean, I don't know how everybody doesn't see it. I feel like maybe the fluoride has finally kicked in and everybody is just too dumb to figure it out. Because you can't watch Jake Tapper for 10 minutes and not hear him make four totally incoherent statements and three or four other blatant lies about things. And you're like, this is the media? No wonder you guys are getting your teeth kicked in by Last American Vagabond and X-22 Report these internet these websites or YouTube channels that are destroying the nightly news numbers for the mainstream media. So 2020 is going to expose.
I mean, are they making themselves irrelevant? I mean, you talk about this controlled demolition of the American empire where they think they're in control, they're managing it. But, do they risk losing control in this operation when they discredit themselves so badly?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the problem as much as it frustrates me to hear the media blatantly lie like this. I feel a little bit encouraged because I know that the more they do that, the greater the chances that they'll wake up people to the utter hypocrisy.
I mean, the CBS News, Walter Cronkite of the 60s and 70s in a way was, because it was less obvious, less absurd, was more effective.
Yeah.
Than today. So in many ways, it's in a perverse way, it's an improvement. Because, I mean, obviously America's decayed more, and the state of the economy and also overall society, all the indexes are a lot worse than they were in 1965. But in the early 60s, you really could have come, Dan Rather and Walter Cronkite claim that JFK was killed by a lone nut assassin and fake the whole thing. Even Dan Rather misrepresenting what he saw in the Zapruder film. They're promoted for that. They do very well after that. But I don't think now they could pull something like that off. At least they'll say it. To this day, they still repeat the Kennedy assassination as if Lee Harvey Oswald was the assassin, when a good two-thirds of the public don't believe that. The problem with the public is, and I've heard, it was Mark Crispin Miller, I heard him speaking on 21st Century Wire, the Sunday show, and he was saying what we're seeing in 2020 now is sort of a consequence of not dealing with what happened, on November 22nd, 1963.
Yes. So true. I mean, everything changed there. And the media's role in this has been, it can't be overstated. They are co-conspirators in this whole coronavirus situation. Mm-hmm. The things that they've done, the lies that they have told with a straight face, the fear that they have instilled in the public, that because they know, look, if it was up to CNN, there'd be a school shooting every week. They love them. Great for ratings, people talking about it, people fearful. It's the best thing that they can get. So they love this. They love this coronavirus situation. Don't let them fool you with this fake sympathy. This is the greatest thing that's ever happened to the mainstream media, because they get a bunch of people that are scared and stuck in their homes in front of their television. So you're like, installing a heroin drip in somebody's living room. I mean, they're there. You're a captive audience, and so the media can propagandize them. I'd like to remind people as well about the Smith Modernization Act of 2012, which Obama signed and passed in the NDAA the following year, which legalized propaganda inside the United States to be used by the mainstream media against the American people. They legalized lying to us because they intend to do some lying.
Well, it's funny, because when you heard about that, I speculated, why would they be doing that? Obviously, they've been BSing us for a long time without benefit of the law, but maybe there was a planned escalation of that. And yes. They don't want to be held, you got to give us some legal cover here in case something gets exposed.
I think they needed to give the media legal cover as well.
Well, remember like some of those strange shootings, where they go into, the one out in San Bernardino with it, right after the shooting? This couple with a kid, which ends up committing suicide and shooting, which is an odd thing. But the media storm the person's apartment, the couple's apartment, and you had media walking around playing with opening books and touching the couple's personal effects. Well, if that couple did indeed do that shooting, this is a potential crime.
Yes.
But if that's a crime. So, but if it's a fake crime scene, then that can be charged with.
Right. The police chief said that he described their apartment there as a veritable bomb manufacturing facility. And I was like, well, then why'd you let the media go in there?
It doesn't make any sense.
I mean, unless you wanted to blow them up, which, believe me, I've thought of, it's not out of the realm of possibility. But they were all fumbling around in there. Like, I remember seeing the videos. It was like a camera guy and then a reporter with a microphone, and there were like four sets of them all in the living room. They were bumping into each other going through. This is a crime scene, people. You're just going to let the media contaminate it and go pull it. And then of course they were like, here's the suicide note. Here's, with all the demands and we blame this on all the wars in the Middle East. And it's like, did you bring in the JV team to run this operation? This is pretty sloppy. You guys are losing your credibility. And it's funny because I knew that was going to happen. I saw that the day my mom came over to my place. She was over at my house, just happened to be there sitting on the couch. We were talking, we turned on the television and it was like breaking news, this shooting. And neither one of us knew anything about it before. This was the first moment we were hearing about it. And I turned to my mom and I said, if I tell you five things that are going to happen in this shooting that we don't know anything about, will you believe me that this is an operation? I didn't know anything about it. And she said, oh, go for it. Sure. What do you got? And I said, there'll be Muslims. They'll leave a manifesto. The crime scene itself will be totally convoluted and totally contaminated. There will be early reports of white military looking guys doing the shooting. And in the end, my final fifth speculative point is that the gunmen will all be killed, murdered right there. I mean, they will never talk. They will all die at the scene. She goes, look, those are pretty specific things. Let's see how it turned out. Next day, all five of them were true. And so I'm not Nostradamus, clearly. I don't work. I've never worked for I'm not a detective. I've never done that. I'm just a guy that has written a couple books and has a podcast. So if I can figure this out, then it must not be that sophisticated. And we can see these things happen over and over again. And it's just a reminder that a lot of these shootings happened after after the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012 was passed and it legalized this. And so it's hard to tell when you're consuming your mainstream media news, how much of that sausage is the truth and how much of it is the propaganda, you know, cause it's all mixed in there and it's not labeled, but it's coming out of your television and it's going into your brain and you have to sort it out. And that is tough to do under the best of circumstances. Now think about, most of the people don't even know that they need to be sorting it out. They just assume it's all true. And that, you know, maybe I can excuse that back in like, you know, the Walter Cronkite days, you know, when people kind of got loyal to their news guy and they said, I like Tom Brokaw. He seems like a straight shooter. And I can maybe understand it back then. The propaganda was not quite so obvious, but these days, like seriously, it's obvious. But it's obvious to us. When you turn on the news and you see this propaganda, but I still have to remind myself that there's a very large segment of the population that just hasn't even had the thought that maybe what they're seeing on their nightly news isn't entirely true. And that's troublesome to me because I feel like that's a thought that needs to go through your head like really early on in the process. And like, if you're not even at that step yet, like there might not be hope for you to wake up in time to get out, you know. And Jeff and I write this book. We talk about pushing down the plunger. And we draw comparisons to that, Banda Aceh tsunami, December 26th of 2004. Yeah. And that morning people got out of their hotels and walked down to the beach and the water was gone. You know, the water line where it normally was, they couldn't even see it. It had receded so far out and people didn't know what. Like, wow, this is crazy. And they walked out and they took pictures and they found shells. But the people that had experience, the people that had been through something like that, the people that had seen those sorts of situations before, they knew what that meant. They knew that meant the water was going out, but it was coming back in a gigantic wave and they headed for higher ground. And the animals instinctively also knew to head to higher ground too. There was reports of like elephants and, you know, like running for the hills before the tsunami came. And we're trying to like make this kind of comparison in the book towards the end that like what we're seeing right now is the water going out. And for those of us that recognize the signs that is not going to, you know, what's coming is going to be very bad. We're saying get to higher ground. We're saying get yourself, get your friends, get your family, be prepared. Think about this sort of stuff. Think about the ramifications of this, because a lot of the components that we talked about in the book, when we started writing it in 2018, when we went back in and added the coronavirus situation, we had to change a lot of the verb tense in there from the stuff that we were talking about happening in the future. I had to go back in and change stuff to make it in the past tense because it had already happened in between when we started writing and when we were revising it this summer. So we're not, you know, Karnak the Magnificent here, you know, reading letters up against our head or anything. We're taking an objective look at the signs of impending collapse, and we are ringing the alarm bells and trying to tell people, like, get your act together, take a look at what we think is coming, and do what you need to do, make the moves that you need to make to position yourself to get out of the way of this. You're not going to be able to stop it. You're just going to need to be able to get yourself to a place where you're just not impacted as badly, however that means. And then from that point on, you know, you have the opportunity. You've survived it. You made it through. What does the new version look like after the destruction of the American Empire? I mean, it just depends on where you are in the world. It depends on what you do or what you want to do with your life. So, you know, there's going to be a whole lot of opportunities. It's going to be rough, though. It's going to be rough. I take no pleasure in saying that. I wish we were talking about all kinds of great things that are on the horizon. But these people have designs on America. They cannot put this one world government plan together that they have, that they openly talk about. I'm not talking about putting on my tinfoil hat here. These are the things that they write about in their books and they talk about in their speeches and they talk about at Davos and at Bilderberg. I mean, these are real situations. They are trying to make a one world government, and they cannot do that with the last remaining superpower standing in its way. And that is the reason why the American Empire is slated for destruction. And they're very good at what they do. They've set proverbial bombs on our economy, like with NAFTA and things like that, that have 40-year fuses from when they put them in place. They don't destroy the country overnight, but they bleed it to death. And that's where we are. We're coming to like the culmination of all of this, where the horrible trade deals are imploding. The, you know, have gutted our manufacturing capabilities. Everything's been outsourced to China. Now they control our supply chain. Now they make all of our medicine. What about our oil? We have created tension all over the, you know, the Middle East. You know, where are we with the US dollar? Well, we're hyperinflating it like crazy now to try and fight off a fake pandemic. You know, the recipe for disaster is all here. And nobody wants to acknowledge it, because to acknowledge it is to make it real. And I think a lot of people want this to still stay conspiracy theory world. But this is, we've moved on beyond conspiracy theory. This is conspiracy analysis. This is the looking at actual conspiracies that are in place right now that are trying to destroy this country. And if we don't step in time, they will. And it's a shame.
Yeah, I mean, they've destroyed what was real productive about the U.S. economy, the small, local, mid-sized businesses, and they've all to the benefit of these large corporations, so they can come in and kind of pick up the slack at a discount.
Yeah.
That's what you're seeing. I mean, there was a small example of this was in Los Angeles. I was listening to a young lady who does a program out of Los Angeles, how a LA city councilman had said that with the lockdown and the moratorium on rent, that there'd be a lot of property owners that won't be able to meet their mortgage payments anymore, and they'll have to sell at a discount. And the city itself is looking to buy up the property using federal relief funds and then dispersing it, and they saw it as an opportunity. So it's disaster capitalism. Although, you know, that, I think Naomi Klein came up with that, but she's all on board the lockdown.
Right.
You know? Right. So when I could really, so when the big, she'll talk about nickel and dimed and these things and all this progressive economics she supposedly believes in, but when it comes to the big global operation, she's bought off or she's all on board with it. But yeah, I mean, you've America's stats, Americans, and even the world over, the developed or the industrial world was shut down all at once, and all that implies some sort of de facto world government right there. And that's what these international bodies are all about, World Health Organization, these NGOs that are transnational operations. But the fact that, you know, that whether it's the UK government, the US government, US was a different thing. I think the White House was kind of either caught off guard or infiltrated, both maybe, but the state governments were used in the United States to shut down their economies, as we alluded to earlier, and they seem all on board with it. The networking for that could be the strong city initiatives, where local mayors and governors or mayors are actually will meet with other mayors, bypassing U.S. foreign policy. sister city projects, these things, so they can, these things can all be weaponized for these purposes. But what you had was, again, the lockdown, which from an epidemiological standpoint doesn't serve any purposes, but from a sort of a economic standpoint, it closes, shuts down all these businesses. It further atomizes society, gets everyone online, they're going to computer, people, you know, kids aren't going to school anymore. There's no real social intercourse anymore. Weddings and even funerals, these things where people gather together. Political, I mean, you couldn't even have normal conventions anymore. And good, again, I talked about it earlier where Rahm Emanuel was salivating because the lockdown prevent Donald Trump from having his rallies. It turns out he did have his rallies and they're very popular. But this was tailor-made for a brain-dead candidate like Joe Biden to campaign from his basement.
Never let a good crisis go to waste, Rahm.
And cover that up. But then again, we're not holding these people accountable. Rahm Emanuel should be indicted and thrown in, you know, and convicted for his crimes.
He's a criminal.
He's a criminal. And same with Newsom and know, these they're all. It's a network here. An investigation would unveil this. I think you could build a good case against Bill Gates, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Imperial College of London, John Hopkins University, George Soros, and I mean, really, if you're going to go out and somehow claim that white supremacists are planning to riot and cause mayhem when it's actually happening, and these organizations are being lavished with corporate funds, NGO funding, foundation funding, this is all criminal behavior. A state level Bureau of Investigation, police, district attorneys that weren't co-opted could easily prosecute a case like this. Even the Department of Justice. Where's the 14th Amendment when you need it? When they were shutting
RICO
down.
RICO case, right?
RICO cases. But then you have a Supreme Court that says, yeah, they've shut all the churches because of the pandemic, but that's not a violation of the First Amendment. Free exercise of religion. That's like, okay. Because we say so. And they can cry emergency. They can cry public health crisis without any providing material evidence for as such. That when you make the claim of an emergency, okay, show me your proof. Show me your data. Not your computer model, your data. Show me the bodies. Oh, we don't have that. But trust us anyway. And there's a lawsuit in Ohio that's doing that, that's challenging the factual basis for the pandemic, because there are laws in the books, criminal laws for declaring a fake public or emergency, public health emergency, and there's all types of fraud involved in that if you're declaring and you're using money for that when it doesn't really exist. And again, a real investigation would expose this thing as being completely false. So that's where we are. We stood back and we saw them shut down the economy, throw 40 million Americans out of work, put them all on welfare, more or less. And then the big debate was, how big should the next relief check be?
Right.
Really? That's where politics is? What about no sense of any fiscal responsibility? But that goes back to your dollar and the Federal Reserve System. They're able to do that because they've created this global currency, the U.S. dollar. Well, they can get away. They can run the debt up in the meantime. But I think what this is just sort of a Cloud-Piven plan. You ever heard of the Cloud-Piven plan?
Yeah. Yeah. It's in the book.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Yeah. I mean, this is kind of what it is. You run the debt up and you collapse the system. You go, oh, well, and Klaus Schwab is saying that. Obviously, the system doesn't work. The global economy has reached an end point. Well, buddy, you're the World Economic Forum guy. You run the world economy. That's what you claim to do. So you created all these problems. Why would we go to you for a solution?
Exactly. The same maniacs that created these problems are offering the solution. It is that classic problem reaction solution.
And what gets me
paradigm.
Is no journalist, when they interview this villain, asks them that. It's like during all this coronavirus, the press conferences that the governor said, there was never any adversarial questions by the press.
No. Yeah. No, and you know what I would have liked, you know what would have made me think that the media actually cared about your health is if instead of just constantly hammering on, once we get the vaccine, then everything will be fine. If they had said instead, in the meantime, people, go exercise, eat healthy, take your vitamins, get sunlight, take vitamin C, take zinc, take vitamin D. All these things will help you be in a better position, help your body, give it the best chance it can. Don't go to McDonald's and eat. We didn't hear any of that.
Oh, yeah. I drive around, and because McDonald's stores are either limited capacity or open, so a lot of people lining up, right? Drive through. And you see people wearing masks as they drive up, line up to buy McDonald's food.
Because they care about their health.
Like I said earlier, the if they just shut down all the fast food restaurants, they would have saved more lives. You know.
Yeah, yeah, it would have.
No.
But that's no fun, you know?
There's no fear there.
I mean, it's like America is like, we want change, but not that much change. I mean, I don't want to have to give up my McDonald's, right? So a lot of people are just unwilling to actually, you know.
Well, I mean, they
change
could.
Change their behavior.
I mean, you talk about controlled demolition. They could manage this collapse or reorient the economy where you wouldn't create mass suffering. But
they wouldn't want to let a crisis go to waste.
Yeah, well, also they wouldn't be in control anymore. You see this. So when they say the crash is coming, it's inevitable. Well, they're making it inevitable because at the end of the day, even during the Great Depression, right before the 29 crash and recession, there's still the same amount of people working, farms producing food, goods and services. There's still similar material wealth, but the collapse of the money economy that was engineered by the money elite created the collapse. But then everything was bought out for a song. So all those millions of unemployed that it created were suffering so a few could get very rich in the process. This is, you know, the pump and dump thing. This is something that Charles Lindbergh's father said was inevitable when they created the Federal Reserve System. They said that now, depressions and panics will be scientifically created. And that's what they've done. I mean, yeah. Have they really stabilized the global economy with the central banking system?
No.
You have periodic crashes, right? That everyone always seems to benefit from. And this was a crash covered by the pandemic. But pandemic became a cover for yet another crash where they went out and they created $6 trillion to bail out Wall Street while they made everyone unemployed. Just like back in 2008 where they bailed out Goldman Sachs at a fraction of that, they could have paid off everyone's mortgage. But they want the debt to persist because the debt's part of the weapon here, part of the economic weapon they're using.
Yeah. And it's part of my awakening to this came when I read John Perkins' book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Mm-hmm. And it really explained like the IMF and World Bank and the way they loan third world countries money that they can't afford to borrow to build some hydroelectric power plant. And then when everything doesn't pencil out the way they thought it was going to, which of course the bankers knew it wasn't going to, they find themselves owing more than they can afford. And then the IMF and World Bank say, well, you owe us a lot of money, but we can work something out. And they get them they get their tentacles on them and they make them, you know, do things they didn't want to do. So that was my first entry into current, you know, debt as a weapon. And how, the revelation I had because of it was that I was in Las Vegas selling new homes, and the people that were coming buying homes from me had no business buying homes, but they were getting approved by our lender. And so they're going, well, God, I guess I can afford this $400,000 house, even though I make $8 an hour. And because I shouldn't be able to afford it, but they gave me a mortgage and it's their money. So clearly they should. You know, I guess I can afford it. And that was the mentality. And like, as I'm reading his book, I was right in the middle of that, you know, mania in Las Vegas where prices were going through the roof and we were selling houses, you know, like crazy every day. And I was like, oh my God, I understand the scam now. And sure enough, when the bubble burst, those banks took back tangible houses and got paid off on the insurance that they had on the mortgages. Mm-hmm. It was this unbelievable scam. And
Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway comes and buys up all these properties. Now they're these are properties that they rent.
Yeah. Yeah. The Goldman Sachs vulture funds were out. Chase was out. I mean, in Vegas, they were just like, you know, they would talk to these guys that were managing bulk REO portfolios. And and Goldman Sachs would say, like, what have you got? And he'd say, well, I've got some houses here and this. And they'd just say, we'll take them all. You know, like, I don't care. Like, they're just buying them sight unseen.
Well, it's house, they're playing with house money, too. So,
yeah, exactly.
It doesn't matter to them. This kind of factors into the whole pandemic or scamdemic thing. Did you see that document that was leaked by a liberal member of parliament in Canada?
Yes.
He talked about the Great Debt Reset.
Yes.
And that's the IMF and World Bank where they come in and, you know, they tank the economy. Everyone's in debt. And they're unemployed. But they say, okay, you're suffering, but we'll take all your debt away if you relinquish all your property. What does that sound like?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's how we get to 2030, where you have that World Economic Forum articles. It's 2030 and you own nothing, but it's great because you just don't bother with these things anymore. You live in a corner or a cubicle somewhere. You don't even own the clothes on your back. You share everything. It's just life's very simple.
Yeah. Oh, it's simple. All right. Simply awful. That's where they want to take us. And we're starting to see that campaign, that great reset, and they've got slick marketing and they're saying they've got buzzwords and all that stuff. And frankly, that's what it takes to get a certain percentage of the American public to get on board with it is a little Madison Avenue magic. And of course, Bill Gates or some celebrities saying, hey, can't wait for the Great Reset. And you're like, oh, Kim Kardashian is excited for the Great Reset. So am I. You know, that's unfortunately where we've gotten. And we're going to walk right into this digital enslavement. Everybody's going to have their phone in front of their face as they're walking straight into this prison cell where our rights are gone, our ability to freely communicate is gone, our money is corrupted, everybody is working their brains out to try and pay their carbon taxes to the one world government, and we're all supposed to be happy about this because we got a universal basic income that is contingent on us getting the vaccine.
Because we're sustainable now.
Yeah, but because we're saving the planet, of course.
Yeah.
Right. We're just not allowed to see the rest of the planet because we're not allowed to leave our city unless we have the proper sort of identification and reasons for going. But they would never do that, except that they've already started doing that in Australia with this vaccine or with this coronavirus situation. So we're seeing dry runs all over the globe. We're seeing the social credit system rolled out in Shenzhen, China, which is dystopian, is not even the word to describe it. That's coming, and you can start to see all the pieces sort of slowly coming together, and you're like, okay, I see where the mandatory vaccine, but it'll be a vaccine that if you don't get it, you're not allowed to go do anything like get on a train or get on an airplane. And you go, well, that would never happen, except that it already currently happens in China, in their social credit system in Shenzhen, where if your score gets too low, you can't get on an airplane, you can't get on a train. So we're seeing it, compliance being, the carrot and the stick, especially with that social credit system. The upside is if you have a high social credit score, if you go someplace and need to rent a bicycle, like in China, you get a discount on it because your score is high. The downside is if your score is too low, then when you talk to people on the telephone or send emails to your friends that have high credit scores, their scores go down just because they're associating with you and your low score. So like this is already happening in China. And this is part of the types of things that the United States government looks at. And instead of rightly saying, we don't want any part of this, they're saying, oh yes, how can we get that? Let's do that now. Let's do that. How can we get people to accept this? And so you can see like this slow roll towards that social credit system. You can see how a vaccine would be part of it. You could see how you would be rewarded for taking the vaccine by getting the UBI. If you don't get that mandatory, that non-mandatory vaccine, then your social credit score goes down low, and then you don't qualify for the UBI. So you got to be compliant. I mean, you can see it. You can see it, the pieces being put together right in front of our faces. And so it's one of those things. It's like, well, what do we do? What do we do about it? Well, the first thing we do is we acknowledge that it's coming, and we have the conversation about what it may look like. Then after we've got that out of the way, then we can put our heads together and try and figure out ways to make sure that it doesn't actually wind up happening. But we're still at that first step, still trying to get people to like wake up to the fact that this is what's coming, and these are the possibilities, and that these people are very methodical about what they do, and they're doing a very good job of inching us towards this dystopian nightmare. And if we're not paying attention, we'll be there before we know it.
Yeah, there was a Whitney Webb wrote an article a few months ago. She discovered there was a organization called the Artificial Intelligence National Security Commission or something to that effect. I forget something along those lines. I forget what the acronym is. But it was created by one of the Defense National Authorization Acts, and it studies artificial intelligence. And the conclusion was that in order to catch up with China, we have to surpass China, of course, in creating social credit scores. And this is also we have to seek to do away with the called legacy systems. And, of course, the legacy system was like brick-and-mortar stores, personally owned automobiles, mm-hmm. cash.
Yep.
And everyone going on electronic digital commerce and everyone monitoring. And the fact that, you know, we got to mimic and surpass a authoritarian communist regime, you know, you think something like that, how un-American that is, right? Whatever that means, whatever American is these days. Right. But this was written, I think, report was 2018 or something. And it's funny how the pandemic, the coronavirus fear, creates conditions where that's implemented.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, everyone kind of gets on board because, you know, then you need to have job opportunities like, you say, grocery delivery services, something like that, where, well, I make a buck doing it, but then you have to do it because I've been thrown out of work. And so this is how, you know, how they make a system which is really coercive look voluntary. They narrow options through economic repression. And all of a sudden, everyone's kind of guided to this one thing where everything, all the other alternatives have been foreclosed because of uncontrollable events like a pandemic and containment measures. So you're making the best of it, but you're being guided the whole time into that one mm-hmm. direction, and you're not really free. There's a science to coercion, and sort of the Anglo-American Zio Empire has mastered it very subtly. Sort of the soft totalitarian measures that we're now being presented with.
Yes, I agree with all of that. That's it's.
And the velvet's getting very thin. So.
Yeah.
We're feeling the mailed fist, and but yeah, like you said, it's there for anyone who can see. They can see the roadmap, the planning, the schematic. Just look outside. What do your eyes tell you what's going on? Then compare it what you're being told what's going on the media. It's completely different. People aren't dying everywhere. The weather's nice right now in most of the country. And, you know, you can go out and earn, you know, most people aren't dying. They're healthy and they may catch a cold. And yes, people will die, but it's no reason to fear because that's a part of life. And that's, but they've used all this stuff because everyone's so fearful now they can shut everyone down. I just can't believe that people reacted the way they did. I mean, maybe because I'm just going into this thing, I was more skeptical because I was familiar with other scams. So I was like, what's going on here? But you think after, you know, 4 months, remember, first it was flatten the curve 2 weeks.
Yep.
And then within a few weeks, you had like Governor Newsom or Mills in Maine talking about we must enter into the new normal. So what the hell are you talking about? Oh, the new normal and build back better. That's Davos. That's the Great Reset. That's all those billionaires that get together every year and they talk about how they're going to screw everyone. Now they really want to screw everyone, you know?
Yeah. And then we got TikTok nurses, you know, dancing. And while we were being told simultaneously, the hospitals are overflowing. Mm-hmm. So it scrambles your head. You know, you're trying to process this and you're thinking, you know, if you're somebody that bought into it from the beginning or didn't, you know, just wasn't skeptical like we were, they go, oh my God, this is crazy. The hospitals are overflowing, you know, except that there were people that were going to the hospitals with cameras and they were saying, there's no overflowing going on here. And then the TikTok nurses with their videos and things like that. And you go, I wanted to shake everybody and say, like, do you not feel like you're being messed with here? Like, you don't see this as kind of like them sticking their fingers in your eyes? Like, you're in your home right now because you can't go outside because everybody's dying. They're all at the hospital and these nurses are killing themselves working so hard, but they have the time to make these choreographed dance videos and there's dozens and dozens of them and nobody asked for them. And you're not asking, hey, man, why are you dancing? Shouldn't you be working?
Shouldn't you be working your ass off so
that I can get out of my house?
Here in the springtime, local governments, they actually put police tape on playgrounds to keep kids from going outside and playing.
Yes.
You know, many leagues weren't able to play this year baseball because of the fear of the disease. You had to wear a mask if you're near the park or something. My area never did that, but a local jurisdiction did do this. Then they shut the league down because not enough people were wearing masks. Of course, no kid, I mean, the lowest, even if there is something out there, the kids are the least risk to this stuff.
Yeah.
And people complied with this, you know, and no one stopped to say, this is ridiculous. This is stupid.
They were shunned if they did. They were anti-science. They wanted grandma to die, for God's sake. How dare you want grandma to die? What did she do to you? You know, it's collective insanity.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I'm not trying to say I had it all figured out on day one, but I, like you, I recognized the signs of scams. And so I was very concerned that we were in the beginning of a scam.
This goes back to people, normies, even my own family, not recognizing like November 22nd, 1963, JFK. That's kind of like truth 101 to me. If you don't pass that test, then geez, come on. But even like 9/11, you know, Building 7, you're not going to be able to recognize patterns. And if you don't recognize patterns, you're not going to be alerted to this stuff. And you're really going to think that you can get useful information from the idiot box or from the mainstream media. And then people are late in the game. Like now, you know, a lot of people are really skeptical about the virus, but they don't see the bigger plan here. It isn't stupid liberals, or it isn't the personality of Mario Cuomo, or you know, the Daffy witch in Michigan, Whitmore. Mm-hmm. And they're easy to attack. And maybe that's part of the reason why they're in the positions they're in. But it's much bigger than that. And again, you can't look at this whole thing, even the current election debacle in, it's all part of a game that they're playing. And it's all, again, the big game here is sort of a color revolution in the United States, take it down. They had to get Trump out of the way for the great reset that they're going to implement. And they openly talk about it. It's on the website, and it's the New World Order. It's it may not be black helicopters, maybe they're navy blue helicopters.
They'll be rainbow helicopters.
Maybe rainbow helicopters, yeah. You know, and it can go so far. You can see the plans implemented so far. Yet still people are in denial. Good example, you get something ambitious as a Great Reset being unveiled. With a very consequential influence group like the World Davos. I mean, we hear about Davos. It's not like Bilderberg, where you remember years we were told Bilderberg didn't really exist and it does exist, right. But it's irrelevant. Well, Davos has been reported on. It's always been like a bunch of billionaires getting together talking about how progressive they should be. Okay, fine, believe that. But nevertheless, everyone agrees that it is consequential, meaning whenever the world's wealthiest people are getting together with politicians, captains of industry, the journalists. These are people, when they coordinate, they're able to create a false reality because they control the media, the education system through this network. So they can coordinate. It's a coordinating meeting. It's a coordinating body for the very thing we're seeing unleashed, like the Great Reset. But it's so ambitious. What they're saying is so radical. They could never get it through normal democratic or legislative procedures. They have to create a situation. They need psychological warfare. They need to create a false reality like a pandemic that can bring upon a collapse and create the material conditions on the ground, which will lead people to accepting radical measures like a Great Reset. Whereas otherwise they couldn't, say, hey, I want to, create a situation where you don't own anything and you got to share a car or, you live in a box and you're eating bugs instead of meat because it's good for the environment. No, but they create the conditions where that situation becomes a reality and where no one's really particularly to blame for it. It's just, hey, just the way things worked out,
Right.
As opposed to being a plan.
It's genius. Yeah. I mean, it's evil genius, obviously, but it is a genius system they've created. They have the ability to create reality, like a version of reality that we will we will believe, and then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. We wind up hearing about eating bugs. You know, we started hearing about eating bugs a couple of years ago, and everyone went, ooh, and then it's like, eating bugs, oh, they do it in other parts of the world. And then, you know, a year from now, it'll be, look at how much protein are in these bugs. And then 5 years from now, it'll be like, what do you mean you're not eating bugs? You know?
Yeah. And, it's like, what do you mean not wearing a mask?
Right. What do you mean you're not wearing a mask? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're starting to, I mean, one of the things that rubbed me the wrong way right off the bat, right when this whole pandemic started kicking off, was I felt like the media, I felt like not the media necessarily, but the commercials that I was seeing on television mm-hmm. were pushing to normalize the mask. Mm-hmm. They were, you know, it was showing everybody with their masks on and doing mask things and, hey, elbow bumping and not getting too close to each other. And I don't want to, you know, and I was like, they're trying to normalize this. They're trying to make this so that this is a normal thing. It's not a normal thing. None of this is normal. It shouldn't be normal. It isn't normal. We need to get rid of this nonsense as fast as we can. It is very harmful for us psychologically. But you could see Madison Avenue doing what they do. I have a marketing degree. So, you know, I'm always trying, I'm always watching the advertising to see what it's doing, or if it's, you know, I can see a little marketing gimmick in there or a strategy or something. And it's got all of it with the mask, the normalization, the happy people, the virtue signaling by the corporation that's advertising. Hey, look how safe we are. Hey, Domino's Pizza, we won't even get anywhere near you. I'll tell you what, we'll leave your pizza on a street corner. That's how dedicated we are to our social distancing. We'll just put it on your grass. And you know what I mean? It's like,
despite the fact you ever made the pizza, touched it.
Exactly. That's the point.
It's, you ever like, put it in the box.
Exactly. It's this false sense of security. Yeah. Meanwhile, there's 100 other things that are contaminating that stupid pizza. But thank God you think, because it didn't get delivered the final 10 yards to your house, that it is now magically safe. And then you go about your day, and guess what? You don't die from that pizza. You know why? Because it's not going to kill you anyway. Mm. It was never going to kill you.
You'll drink Diet Pepsi with that pizza.
Yeah, exactly. Or you'll be 400 pounds on a street corner with a mask over your face yelling about, I can't breathe, George Floyd. And you're like, oh, because you're concerned about your health, right? Good for you. You're lecturing us about doing the right thing by wearing masks because you can barely make it up a flight of stairs. I mean, the hypocrisy in this country is so infuriating that I'm to the point where, like, I've stopped being nice about the vaccine part. I'm still trying to be civil about everything else. I'm still trying to remember, not everybody started looking into this stuff like I did. Not everybody takes the time to read the things I'm reading or watch the videos I'm watching. I have to have realistic expectations. I'm writing books about this, for God's sake. I shouldn't expect people to have this, you know, vast amount of knowledge about these topics, because most people aren't really into it. But boy, I'll tell you, I just get disappointed sometimes. It's just that the people aren't even making even the smallest of efforts to try and, like, wake up or try and, you know, examine to see if what they're getting is the truth, or before they, you know, start talking about once a vaccine will cure everything. Like, before you inject some experimental vaccine into yourself, you know, you might want to look into it and to the science of it. And the fact that you get pushback from people calling you anti-science and anti-vax and all of these horrible things, I have found myself becoming less tolerant of that, and I've been way more direct on the vaccine front, and I've gotten away from saying, don't get the vaccine because it's really bad for you and you need to research it, to I'm now at the point where I'm like, take the vaccine then, dummy, go take it. If you're so certain and you're so trusting of your government and your television and your mainstream media and big pharma, and then go be the first person in line. But don't come complaining to me when you grow a third arm or where you drop dead or whether when they switch on 5G, you light up like a Christmas tree or whatever's going on in that vaccine. Don't come into me for sympathy because you won't get any of it because I've been screaming about this stuff for a long time, and as have a lot of us, about the dangers of Big Pharma and the vaccine program and the things that they're putting into it and the real serious pro science that tackles that. I'm not anti-science. I'm pro science. That's the reason why I have problems with the vaccines. And getting pushback over and over from people that haven't looked into this, don't know what they're talking about, and just reflexively call you anti-vaxxers or anti-science because of it is infuriating to me. And I like, because the reason why I'm screaming about all this stuff is because I don't want people to get hurt by them. I'm not screaming to just be a jerk. I'm screaming because I want people to look into that and then discover that there's downside risk to these vaccines and then make a decision based on all of the information. And if they choose to get the vaccine, then after they've done the research, then go for it. That's up to them. But the low IQ morons that don't know anything about anything, but want to tell you that you're anti-science on this, you know, I just have no tolerance for those people anymore. And I really feel like, you know, maybe this fast track vaccine will be the one thing that wakes people up to the dangers of vaccine. You know, when the first batch of morons get in line and get it and then fall over, then maybe everyone else will say, hey, this is probably not a great idea. Let's like take our time with this, especially considering the fact that the coronavirus has a 99.7% recovery rate. Okay, so like we're not curing the Black Plague here. Let's put this in perspective.
And if
so,
you're young, it's even higher. It's like 99.99.
And if you're young, it's even higher. It's even higher than that. I was giving the worst case scenario.
Yeah, that takes in all the sick CDC. People. Yeah.
So it's just, 2020 is exhausting, you know?
Well, that's one of the things, I mean, close it out here on maybe a positive note, is that maybe they've gone too far with this, whereas this is an opportunity. A lot of people have woken up. The pandemic itself woke a lot of people up. Millions, perhaps millions in America alone. Now, they currently don't have agency, and that you don't see that represented in the political class. A little light in the Trump administration with Dr. Atlas, whereas there's complete darkness in the Biden administration. I'm sorry, the Biden campaign. But good example. This all this election debacle. Again, you've had perhaps 70 million American voters now realizing just how fraudulent the elections are. The system is losing legitimacy. And the more they kind of go for, the more people are starting to roll in their eyes and start really questioning the system. And it may not happen on our, you know, in our lifetime or the time frame that we want or in a way we want it to. Even this election might be a blessing in the end. And if actually Trump and all with all his flaws, whatever he is, if he seems to be fighting it, and if he does push this, not only in the courts, but also in the electoral college system, he might be able to deliver. It might deliver a blow to whoever it is, the oligarchy that's trying to achieve this. For some reason or another, Trump seems to be an obstacle at some level. Maybe it's part of the dialectic. I don't know. People who say they're sure about it, they really don't. They're not sure. They're just dismissing it. But there seems to be something there that they want to get him out of the way for. And so in the meantime, in their attempt to carry out a color revolution in the United States, they've exposed themselves a lot to a lot of people. Now that they've revealed themselves, that they're in the room. David Icke put it in these terms where they've – the creatures walked in, the door shut behind him, and there he is before us. What are we going to do about it? And in a sense, that's probably a better place where we were, although it's, you know, right now it's what's going on. It's very uneasy. It's a lot of anxiety. But really, given your research and given what we've talked about tonight, we weren't in a better situation this time last year. Perhaps in a lot, the operation may be further along, but much more people know about it, whereas if they were boiling the frog, they boil the frog a little more, let it simmer, or let it heat up a little while longer, people never would have woken up to it. And now a lot of people have been woken out of their slumber, And if they're not fully awake, at least they're dreary-eyed, but they know something is wrong, you know, so.
That's what I'm hoping to. Yeah. I'm hoping that they overplayed their hand in this situation, be it the disproportionate coverage for a virus that isn't killing the people, that it was said to, you know, the number of dead that was supposed to be. And good. I'm glad. I'm glad that was the situation. I'm glad, you know, so that is one thing that I think woke up a lot of people.
Look at the collapse of sports.
The collapse of sports. Yeah. The collapse of ratings on sports. Mm-hmm. Once they came back with all the social justice nonsense and the virtue signaling, watch their ratings fall apart. You're watching get woke, go broke stuff happening. So there are some real signs that people are not quite as tolerant of this nonsense as the media would have you believe.
And even in the churches where it's exposed, I think, a corrupt hierarchy and clergy. I'm a Catholic. Mm-hmm. And problem is that problem was it was still a problem within the Catholic Church. This is highlighted even more, which, given the reality that that's a problem, is a good thing, because it's woken a lot of people up to the problems.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. How are you going to fix the problems if people don't even know that you have problems? Yeah. Yeah. So it is like the great unmasking,
yes,
so to speak. Yeah, so we've got, you know, the agendas are laid out there in front of us.
Well, here it is. I was listening to John Waters. He's an Irish journalist. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote a book called Give Us Back Our Bad Roads about Ireland. He's very concerned with what's happened with Ireland in recent years. They're corrupted with a pump and dump scheme. I was listening to him on a show. He was talking about we've been given an opportunity here where if things have been going as normal, we could sort of relax in our comfortable mediocrity. And let things just go along slowly. But now that they've accelerated the game, there's a chance for greatness among even the most humble of folks. I mean, just by standing up for something.
Yeah.
And he wasn't being grandiose. And I'm not trying to be grandiose on this, but if you do stand up and speak up for yourself and oppose this, you have a chance to be for greatness, because you're standing up for truth and what's right. And in the end of the game, at the end of the day, that's all really that can be asked of us. And so this is an opportunity, a great opportunity. Perhaps it is the greatest time to be alive, because never before has so much been revealed with the capacity to talk. Look, you and I are talking to one another, and perhaps thousands, tens of thousands will listen to this conversation. They'll talk to people. And so it's an opportunity, although it seems that right now it seems very dark and disturbing. And it's cliche, but it's always the darkest just before dawn. We just have to do what's right, you know.
Yeah.
And doing what's right, standing up for something, is its own reward in the final analysis.
Yeah. Yeah. You can live with yourself. Like, yeah. If you, and that was, Jeff and I had this conversation too, right before we decided to do the book. It went from like, well, this sounds like a good idea to write the book, to part of us, we acknowledged that, like, if we knew about these sorts of things, if we had the capacity to write about this and we didn't do it, like, that's pretty irresponsible of us. So we kind of felt in a way an obligation, not in a bad way, but a good way, but we felt an obligation to convey this message, because we know that it can, you know, potentially wake people up, get them in a position where they're thinking differently, make some decisions that get themselves out of the line of fire of what's coming. And boy, if we sat on that information, like, how could we look at ourselves in the mirror too? So, I mean, we wanted to write the book, don't get me wrong, but there was also part of us that was like, this is also the right thing to do. And when you're doing the right thing, things align. You know, yeah. And like, for us, the timing worked out for us. The cover, I had a problem with the cover because our artist disappeared. And so at the last minute, I had to have a different guy come in, and he made a suggestion for the cover that I had never considered. And I love it now. And it is, we talked about Building 7. The cover art is Building 7 wrapped in the American flag coming down. So it was, you know, when you're doing the right thing and you're coming from a place of wanting to make the world better and make your government better and your friends and family better, I feel like good things happen. And we timed this book just perfect on the release. And and people responded, and I'm really grateful. And I think people will get a whole lot out of the book, and I think that they will pass it on. It'll be the type of thing that you read it and then you go, hey, I got this book for you, and then you hand it off to your friend. And I really hope people do that as well, because the information is in there, and we lay it out in a real logical way. And I guess it's for people to take that information and do what they want with it, you know?
So yeah, the book is The Controlled Demolition of the American Empire, from the founding of the Federal Reserve to 9/11 to the coronavirus panic. Of course, they can get that at, where's the best place to get that?
The only place right now is Amazon. Yeah. So, yeah. Believe me, we're conflicted as well.
Yeah. But you know, use it while you can. So,
we are using them again to serve our purposes. And that is to get that information out. We are using their printing facilities and distribution facilities as in a way to, you know, for our own selfish purposes, which is to print a book that exposes a bunch of nonsense. So we fully acknowledge the paradox of having to deal with Amazon.
And you mentioned you had a podcast program.
Yeah, my podcast is called Macro Aggressions. It is on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, YouTube, and on David Icke's platform, Iconic. So. Great. Yeah, I do two episodes a week. One's an interview episode, and one is a monologue only. And started that the first week of March, right when all of the madness started. I didn't mean to time it that way. It just kind of happened that way. So another example of my timing in 2020 being better than I would have thought. But I'd prefer that we not be in the middle of the pandemic and all that nonsense than to have timed the release of my stupid podcast to coincide with it. But since it happened, you know, I guess I just sort of benefited. So yeah, Macro Aggressions, people seem to think it's okay because they give me ratings and I get nice emails. But it's one of those things, man. I just feel like, much like the book, like a duty, an obligation to talk about this stuff and do what I can, and hopefully it'll make a difference.
Okay, great. Well, I'll let you go. Good night, then. Thanks for coming back on, and I'll post this soon. So.
Cool.
Okay,
thanks
great.
So much. I appreciate it. That's always fun to talk to you. We have good conversations.
Oh, you're certainly welcome. Thanks then. Good night then.
All right. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
There is no real perfection. There'll be no perfect. There's no good revolution. successful.